Mr. Johnson joins us, as always, on a Tuesday and Thursday on Pinder and Steinberg. Sir, we are a week and a half into this NHL season, and the surprises and the overreaction to the small sample sizes is at its finest. What has caught your eye through the weekend?
Well, I mean, seeing Buffalo and Edmonton at the top of the standings after years of fighting for lottery draft positioning is, I guess, a surprise. But, you know, I think for the reasons you highlight there, it being such a small amount of games, you know, I don't know that we can read too much into anything we've seen, good or bad. I was a little surprised, actually. I was doing a little item the other day on the Ducks, and, you know, I was looking at, you know, for them, which has been a pretty good start under Dallas Eakins, and I was surprised to discover they were 5-2 last year and then basically didn't win for a month and ended up right near the bottom of the standing. So, you know, what happens in the first few weeks of the season, I think, should be taken with a grain of salt. But, you know, seeing a few teams that have really struggled in recent years, you know, it's nice to see them get some wins early and try to get some hope back in their markets.
It's been the conversation that everyone seems to want to not have but continues to have around Calgary. How in the world has James Neal turned his career around? He's already bested last year's goal total with Edmonton.
Well, you know, I do think that there's a healthy bit of motivation that came with the way everything went down in Calgary for him. You know, having more of an off season this year than he had the prior two after, you know, losing in the Stanley Cup final with Nashville and Vegas, and, you know, just getting a fresh start. You know, I think that some of that, you add all that together, and it's not a huge surprise. I mean, obviously I wouldn't predict where he'd be today in terms of goals, but you know, to say he would have a 20 or 25 goal season this year, for me, that was something I would have bought into even before puck drop, just because I think that, you know, it's something he's done consistently throughout his career. You know, last year, everything that could go wrong went wrong. I don't think he reacted well to the situation. Everything kind of snowballed on him, but, you know, he's still a guy who scored a lot of goals in this league. And you know, if you give him the opportunity and give him the right mindset, I think it was not that surprising for me to see him do it again.
CJ, I'm curious, and you wrote about this on Beyond Headlines over the weekend, but this Pittsburgh Penguins team, who actually took a big 7-2 win over Winnipeg on Sunday, this Penguins team is very much in survival mode right now. No Malkin. They're facing some other injuries. They were already less deep than we've accustomed to them being. This might be the biggest challenge of a season in Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin's tenure there.
Yeah, I think it is. And you know, it's one of these ones. Of course, I published that article Sunday morning. They waxed Winnipeg that night. They beat, on Saturday night, the Wild 7-4. And if only we could write one story at the end of the year, we'd all look smart every day. But unfortunately, we have to do it before we know how the movie's going to end. But, you know, I would say this about the Penguins. Looking at their roster, the one they had for those games in Winnipeg and Minnesota, you know, three quarters of the forwards they dressed in those games haven't ever had a 30-point season in the NHL. And, you know, I think if you look around league-wide, very few teams would have that be the case, and especially Pittsburgh, who, you know, as recently as last year, obviously had a healthy Malkin, Crosby, Phil Kessel, and some other guys there. And so, you know, they are being tested. And, you know, I noticed today that Jared McCann missed their practice and is day-to-day now with an injury. So you can add one more of the names to the list of, you know, more established players. But, you know, given that I don't expect Malkin's injury to be a short-term one, that if he missed another month or even more from where we're talking right now, that wouldn't be a surprise. You know, I do think it's going to be a challenge, albeit one, I think that, you know, having the best player in the world or one of the best players in the world can help you overcome and, you know, a good goaltender for stretches as Matt Murray's been. But, you know, I think that Pittsburgh is in a tough spot. They'd love to move a defenseman if possible. They're carrying 9D, which is something you don't see too often and is especially interesting given that, you know, for a lot of the season, they've only had 10 or 11 forwards at any given moment to go through a practice with, healthy forwards, that is. And so, you know, they have some cap trouble, they have injury issues, and they have more defensemen than forwards at the moment. So I think that this is a complex situation for Jim Rutherford to manage, and I don't think there's really going to be one easy solution. I think it's just going to be about the guys in the room and Sidney Crosby, Jake Guentzel and company carrying them through this stretch till Malkin's back.
Well, I'm curious as to what the mindset is for Rutherford, because essentially since taking over that team as general manager, he has been in a perpetual win-now state, and he's won now. They won the back-to-back cups, but first-round picks, prospects, it doesn't matter. They have moved those out to help the team in the immediacy, and you can see why. Is that still the mindset, do you think, for Rutherford right now?
Well, he's not going to move a first-round pick. You know, that's one thing that he is not going to do this season. So under no circumstances do I expect that to happen. But I also don't think we're going to see a rebuild here. You know, it's not like he's going to trade one of these established guys out the door, you know, a guy like Crystal Tang, say, who I think still would have a fair amount of value if the Penguins ever wanted to move on from him. You know, the day might come before Crosby and Malkin retire where the Penguins have to go through a little mini rebuild, kind of like what Chicago's trying to do, trying to bring up another generation and while still having Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves in a position where they can be part of a team that wins. But, you know, that day isn't yet here for the Penguins. I mean, it very well might be this year, depending on how all this goes with their injuries, is when they start that. But basically since 2005, when Crosby played his first year in the league, this organization has been all in on trying to win every season. And you know, I don't really believe that's changed with the proviso that, you know, I think they recognize that there's a certain price to be paid. You got to pay your bill eventually when you sort of manage the roster the way they have, and they intend to use their first round pick in June.
It's funny you mentioned Phil Kessel no longer being there, and I saw this. I it's funny that you brought it up in Beyond Headlines. I saw it when David Amber posted it on Twitter over the weekend and posted a poll about is Phil Kessel, who played in his 1,000th NHL game with the Arizona Coyotes over the weekend, are we talking about a Hall of Famer? And you had the chat off the air with a bunch of colleagues in the Sportsnet newsroom. I'm curious as to where you stand on that and what some of the other opinions were of Phil Kessel and the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Well, for me, he's on a Hall of Fame path. You know, that's kind of an asterisk because I think he still needs another few years of productive play. And if you look at the way, again, very small samples, but his time has started with the Arizona Coyotes, it's not been the most productive stretch for Phil Kessel. But, you know, given how consistent he's been, he's up around 800 games played in a row. His contribution as a significant member of two straight Stanley Cup teams, you know, won a Masterton trophy, has an ability, if he plays long enough, certainly to get 1,000 points. You know, 400 goals is all but assured, perhaps even 500 if he plays behind his current contract. I mean, I think all those things suggest he's trending in a Hall of Fame direction. But, you know, at this stage of the NHL, I mean, there's no guarantee he's got five more years in the league. I mean, it's just a fact. If you look around at other 32-year-olds, you know, that's getting to the end for some of these guys. I mean, Kessel had a great year last year with Pittsburgh production-wise. We'll see what he does now on a team that doesn't have as much offensive firepower around him. But, you know, it's kind of a fun debate to get in with a number of guys, and certainly hang around David Amber. Those are the kind of things we're always kicking around when there's a, you know, low moment behind the scenes on Saturdays, because he loves having those debates and discussions.
Let's stay with the Coyotes. It has been an incredible run of bad health for them, I want to say, for the last 2.5 to 3 years. And now Nicklas Hjalmarsson is gone for what sounds like 3 months. This team can't stay healthy. I feel like there's sympathy, but then there's also like, well, they just feel irrelevant because of all the injuries they've had.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And you know, I don't know that we can overstate how significant the loss of Hjalmarsson is for these guys. And I know that doesn't have as big a name and was always even a depth seeming defenseman on the Blackhawks Cup teams that he was on, but if you look at his underlying numbers, I mean, he was an elite defenseman for them, had a huge percentage zone starts in the defensive zone, was a proven shot to, I guess, getting things in the right direction for them. And having him gone for basically not the entire season, but you know, even 3 months from now when he returns, I'm not sure what version of him will be coming back. And so essentially to lose him for the balance of the year is a huge blow to a team that was probably going to be touch and go to be in a playoff race as it is. And, you know, I think it's fair to wonder about that. I mean, Antti Raanta's back in net for them, but, you know, he's lost much of the last year due to injury troubles that he's had. The goals still aren't, you know, coming in bunches. And that's one thing Kessel was brought in to help do. And so far hasn't happened. And so, you know, it's a tough thing for that team. They actually hung in the race longer than anyone would have guessed last year, I think. Played well above what their paychecks or talent or names would suggest you would. And you know, that's going to be the challenge again for Rick Tocchet and his staff, is to try to squeeze every little ounce out of this group, because, you know, having Hjalmarsson go down is a huge blow.
Yeah, no question. Let's stick to some absences. Jacob Markstrom is going to be missing from the Canucks. He's been granted time for a personal leave to attend to a family matter. It's a four-game week for the Canucks. He might be back by the weekend, but certainly not ideal timing in this crunch time year for Jim Benning's Canucks.
It's not, and you know, I can't remember who he came from, so I'm stealing someone's stat, but I saw that in the last year that he's won all but four games as the starting goalie for the Canucks. That Thatcher Demko has four wins in the last 12 months for Vancouver, and everything else goes to Jacob Markstrom. So, you know, I think that sort of speaks volumes about where he's at. He's had a pretty good start to the season as well, and you know, I don't know what's going on with his family. I hope that everything's okay in his personal life, but you know, from the team's perspective, it's tough timing for sure. And you know, we'll see, you know, what Thatcher Demko has. I mean, he's been sort of a prospect of the future for what seems like eternities for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now he's a member of the team, and you know, no matter what goes on with Markstrom this week, you know, I do think that he has to get to a point where they can rely on him a little bit more, where he can deliver some big results. And, you know, this is a great opportunity for him to fill in and under, you know, unexpected circumstances for the Canucks.
Chris Johnson's with us, our NHL insider. Couple of, you know, parallels and similarities between the situations of Jesse Puljujärvi and Julius Honka with the Oilers and Stars, respectively. What's the latest on those two?
Well, they're both back in their hometowns, separate hometowns in Finland, playing in the Finnish league. You know, Jesse Puljujärvi's actually had a great start with Karpat, which is out of his hometown, Oulu, in northern Finland. And, you know, what's interesting, I think, for him is that, you know, I the Edmonton Oilers control what will happen here. I mean, he has to be signed somewhere by December 1st to play in the NHL this season. So, you know, if there's a trade and sign situation here, it's going to have to happen before that December 1st deadline. But, you know, I believe that it's his preference to stay in Finland for the balance of the season. That's not to say if a trade happens today that he wouldn't rethink that position. But I do think that with this season being all about getting his confidence back, getting comfortable, the shuttle between Edmonton and Bakersfield, somewhere along the way, the last three seasons, this guy really lost his way. And, you know, when he was a top prospect, a fourth overall pick from a few years ago, you know, I do believe that he's comfortable spending the entire year in Europe and then, you know, starting fresh next summer and in training camp with whatever team ends up trading for him. Now, you know, Julius Honka's situation is a little bit different. He's back home playing, but I think that he's waiting for the first phone call he gets to get on a plane back to North America, that he's eager to continue his career. You know, he was a 14th overall pick in 2014 and is a little bit older than Puljujärvi and you know, just got to a point where it wasn't working in Dallas, that they had other defensemen similarly puck-minded, you know, puck-moving defensemen, you know, some pretty notable ones there. And, you know, that he's kind of waiting for his next chance and hoping that it's going to come soon, whether a team has to start dealing with some injuries and makes a deal, or even just with each passing day that we have of the season, that some teams are accruing cap space that they might need to sign him. So, you know, it's two guys with similar circumstances, being high picks and having to go home to keep their game shape up. But I do think that the difference in the situation is that Honka really wants to get back to the NHL as soon as possible. And Puljujärvi, I think, is going to take the longer road in an effort to get it right, you know, where he wasn't able to do so in Edmonton.
Speaking of Edmonton, the first foray into the head coaching ranks, and I know you touched on this a little earlier, but the first foray into the coaching ranks of Dallas Eakins in the NHL did not go very well. The start to his second NHL coaching tenure has been a whole lot better with the Anaheim Ducks. What have you heard, and what have your observations been of Dallas Eakins and the Ducks?
Well, I've heard a lot of good things, and I think he was in a much better situation this time to be successful. You know, having had the experience in Edmonton, which obviously didn't go well, which was a humbling experience for him, having coached, you know, in San Diego the last 3 or 4 years and getting to know, you know, a lot of the players that are either up with the Ducks or some of the young guys now that are being integrated into their roster. And I think even his approach has been different. You know, when he went to Edmonton, he felt that he needed to change the culture. It had been a losing team. Obviously, still hasn't been a lot of winning since he left. But, you know, when he arrived, they'd been out of the playoffs for a number of years. You know, I think he tried to put his foot down with conditioning. You know, kind of famously what food was being served in the press lounge, you know, all that stuff. Wanted to really put his imprint on things. And you know, I think at Anaheim, he's had a chance to maybe just have a little gentler touch, be more collaborative. And, you know, I had a conversation with John Gibson a month or so ago, just before camp opened. And he was just mentioning how much it meant to him that Dallas flew to Pittsburgh one day in the summer. And, basically said, what's happened with this team? Where, what do you think we need to do? And really just asked a whole bunch of questions. You know, it wasn't about him coming in saying A, B, and C need to change. He wanted to hear what one of the most trusted members of the team and probably one of the most important members of the team had to think about that. And so, you know, I think that as with any of us, if you make mistakes, as Dallas did in Edmonton, he's learned from them. And, you know, it won't surprise me at all if the Ducks end up being one of the teams that we call, you know, the surprises of the season, because they have some talented young forwards there. John Gibson, for my money, is one of the better goalies in the league. And I think that the atmosphere around the team has improved greatly from where it was at this time last year.
What's going on in New Jersey with Corey Schneider? 2 years now since the double hip surgery. It seems like a weekly topic, but it was especially ugly on the weekend when they allowed five straight to Florida to blow a 4-1 lead.
It's not a good situation. You know, it's tough for the Devils in general. I mean, they had a strange start to the year. They had two back-to-backs out of the gate and then the 3-4. You know, they haven't been able to get a win. They've blown a couple leads in those games, some big leads, like the one you mentioned, but also one to Edmonton last week. And, you know, I think that the struggle for the organization is to remain patient. I mean, they really believe that they would at least be on a better path with the moves they made in the offseason and drafting Jack Hughes. And, you know, he's yet to register a point. The first overall pick hit a couple posts, has been close, but hasn't, you know, got on the score sheet yet. And so there's a lot in the air there. You know, I don't know where that leaves Schneider in all this. I mean, I do know with him that they've tried really hard to be loyal to him, to give him time to recover from that hip surgery, because based on the research that they had done in their front office, that they found other guys like Pekka Rinne that have had that surgery that took a little while to heal. Well, a little while has now since passed. And so, you know, I think that this is a huge season for Schneider. You know, I would have to say if things don't get better, that they may totally move on from him, look to trade him. You know, I don't know at this stage if that's something you can do, but, unfortunately, that's a guy, you know, that everyone says great things about, Corey Schneider, but, you know, I think he's battling for his NHL career at this stage. I don't think it's a stretch to put it that way. And, you know, the Devils need some saves. So they'll stick with him for a little bit longer, but, you know, I don't know how long the leash is at this stage.
All right. Good stuff. Enjoy the Wild and Leafs. I imagine you'll be in attendance tonight for the last place team in the West.
Yes, I'm just here so
Leafs.
I don't get fined. So,
talk Thursday. Thanks,
see you,
man.
CJ.
See you, boys.